mushrooms could slow the progression of prostate cancer. That's just but one of many studies from around the world that can allow us to live a longer and healthier life that we'll be sharing with you today. Also, a special commentary I'll be giving on, okay, you have a new president. What do you know about him? What do you know about his track record? Because whatever he's done in the past, he's going to continue doing. That could be good, constructive, or not. It's not. I'd like your feedback on at what point do we, the people, not the media, not the pundits, we have to be responsible for looking into how someone governs, a governor, a mayor, a president, a senator, anyone that we elect. And when we take an honest look, can we deal with it? So I'm going to have that as a commentary. Also today, I began yesterday by playing a particular video clip. Now that video clip was about the World Health Organization insider, a whistleblower. But I don't think talking with some people yesterday that they really fully grasped how important her statement was. So I'm going to take that clip and take a 3-minute segment of it, emphasizing the power that the World Health Organization has, the law that they made that mandates countries, over 120 countries, to follow exactly what the World Health Organization says, and then Bill Gates coming in and lobbying to become, in effect, identified from all things done and making him literally a nation state. Now think of the arrogance, the conceit, the narcissism within one person to assume because he gives money to these groups that he has a right to sit on their board, and knowing that that board is controlled by people that he is associated with. Therefore, he is the dominant actor, becomes the dominant voice in the entire world on issues that he is completely unqualified for, but strongly economically gainful of. And that's the message gotten away. So we're going to start to refocus who's responsible for the mess that we are now facing and the bigger mess about to come, the Great Reset. The Great Reset is going to be an unmitigated disaster. It will take us from bad to insanely bad. And it's already happening. I'll give examples. And then also we're going to look at the work on ivermectin that could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives and still could, but it's been fought by the World Health Organization and by the Bill Gateses and people who don't want you using something that could prevent you from needing a vaccine. Also, I have a commentary on last night's Tucker Carlson show. He brought on a surgeon, retired, who seemed like a very sincere person, who is adamantly pro-vaccine, as is Tucker, and talking about what the responsibility is if you start giving people this vaccine and they have already a compromised immune system, something I've been talking about, how that could cause a hyper-immune response. I'm going to put that into a different perspective. And today we're sending to Tucker 72 articles. I mean, these are really well-done articles, not opinion pieces, scholarly pieces, fully footnoted, of why he and that doctor and every guest he has on are simply, with good intentions, they are absolutely dead wrong scientifically about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. And I say that having spent over 20,000 hours in real scholarship reviewing every article and as a scientist analyzing, does this prove a vaccine should be put into a schedule? And then looking at the data of how many children are sick today with autoimmune conditions because they've been vaccinated that previous generations have not suffered from. So all these people coming forward in virtue, you know, praising themselves, I'm pro-vaccine. Okay, What do you know about the actual science? Have you read the science? I'll bet not. So we're going to provide them with science with the hope that if they have an open mind, they will change their opinion and put the burden of proof upon an industry that is rife with corruption. We've detailed the corruption. I'm also sending those articles on Merck, on Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, to Tucker Carlson. You want to do a good piece? Then look carefully at what we've uncovered, that none of your staff, none of the lawyers on Wall Street, none of the lawyers at the Justice Department, none of the New York Times reporters, we did it, they didn't. Now, could they? Absolutely. They have the resources, the intellect, the awareness, the cognitive ability to do this. Why didn't they? Why are good journalists, with some exceptions, why are they not touching this subject? We'll get to that. So we have a lot to share today, and we always begin with the latest on health. Now, white button mushrooms are easy to find. They're inexpensive, and they can be great if you lightly saute them, which actually liberates many of their healing properties. According to this research, the chemicals, the phytochemicals present in white button mushrooms may slow the progression of prostate cancer. That's according to this laboratory study that was published by the Endocrine Society in their annual meeting. Now, androgens, that's a type of male sex hormone, instigate the stimulation of prostate cancer cells by binding to and activating an androgen receptor. That's a protein that is expressed in prostate cells. White button mushrooms appear to suppress the activity of the androgen receptor. That's good news. So eat your mushrooms, white mushrooms. You can have them any way you want. Saute them with some onions, caramelize your onions, and then stuff that into a potato. It's delicious. Pour some olive oil on there. Or you can have the mushrooms in, let's say, mix them with shiitake and put them into a soup. You can have mushroom potato leek soup. Lots of ways of doing it. But get your mushrooms each day. University of Tokyo has a study showing that when you write, you know, take out a notepad and write, you're actually having a stronger brain activity when you write on paper than on a tablet or a smartphone. And that's what this study showed. And actually, according to the study, this was published in the Frontiers in Biobehavioral Neuroscience, it's more advanced and useful compared to electronic documents because paper contains more one-of-a-kind information for stronger memory recall. That's also true when you're reading a book, actually reading a book versus reading a Kindle book or something, or reading an excerpt from a book, or reading a little, you know, tiny piece of a book. Because more and more younger people are saying, we're not going to sit and read a whole book. That's just, that challenges our whole life. It puts my life in danger if I have to read a book. There's something wrong by people wanting me to read a book. These people are idiots. And then try having a conversation with someone under 90. Jesus. Yes. Wow, have we dumbed down. Unbelievable. We should actually have pet talking rocks because you'll get more conversation from a rock than you will for some of these people, especially the college graduates. In any case, read books, read articles, write, longhand write. It makes a big difference to your overall capacity to have a better brain. And listen without responding. Listen. Remember, the person that's a good listener is a good learner. You can't learn while talking. You learn while you listen. Now, you can form questions, appropriate questions and comments and responses. But this idea that I'm going to jump in and jump in the first time someone exhales, I'm going to jump in, you've just blocked that energy from coming in because you're already thinking about what you're going to say instead of listening fully to the proper context of what's going to be said. From the University of Leeds, which is in the United Kingdom, an article from the Nutritional Epidemiological Group used 500,000 people who were consuming 25 grams, that's an ounce, of processed meat a day. Now, that might not seem like a lot, but that's a lot of pepperoni on a pizza, for example, or bacon. And it's one rasher of bacon is associated with 44% increased risk of developing dementia. So listen carefully again. Eating processed red meat and eating them on a daily basis can help you develop dementia. And yet we're into processed meats every day in our society. So this was at the School for Food Science and Nutrition. So get rid of the meat. Get rid of all meat. Go towards whole grains. Get your protein from your nuts and seeds, legumes. Snack throughout a day. Graze, what I call it, vegan grazing. Like I have on my desk, I have a bag of sprouted sunflower seeds, sprouted pumpkin seeds, sprouted watermelon seeds. And throughout the day, just take a handful and chew it. An hour later, another handful. You always have protein in your system. Always have quality fiber, essential fatty acids. Tastes good. You can flavor it any way you want. Like I'll take, let's say, some lemons. I'll squeeze some lemons and limes, blend them together, just the juice, put it into a little spritz bottle, and then I'll take a handful of sprouted sunflower seeds, and I'll spritz that lemon-lime on it. It gives you a salty taste, but there's no salt, no sodium. You can use any flavoring agent you want, but it's one way to help you, and that helps diminish dementia. A healthy, organic, plant-based diet diminishes dementia and Alzheimer's disease, substantially diminishes it, whereas eating the wrong foods, which is what we're eating as a country, increases it. From the National University of Singapore comes a study about drinking tea. It slashes the risk of cognitive decline in Alzheimer's disease by a good measure. So having yourself some green tea, and what you do, depending upon time of year, you can make a big sun tea where you put your tea bags or your tea into some form of little container, and you put it out in the sun, a gallon, for example. And throughout the day, the sun is allowing the tea to disperse its phytochemicals into the liquid, the water. You can add any kind of flavoring. I think Manuka honey is both medicinal. It's a very, very functional food. Kills the bad bacteria in your intestines, stomach, throat, and mouth. Or stevia, also good. And or coconut sugar, if you wanted something. It has a low glycemic index. So you can get nice iced tea, and it can stay for several days, and drink that throughout the day. If the weather is colder, just warm it up, and you have a hot tea. But get your tea in every day. That's what this team found. It's neuroprotective. It protects your central nervous system, your neurons, your brain. And either green tea, black tea, or oolong, O-O-L-O-N-G, tea. It's all good. And by the way, the people in the Orient have been using this for thousands of years. So the Koreans, the Vietnamese, the Chinese, the Japanese, all the people in that area. We're just now kind of getting into it. And you have to understand, the teas contain what are called catechins, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N-S, and theophylavins, T-H-E-A-F-L-A-V-I-N-S, and theobromins, T-H-E-A-R-U-B-I-G-I-N-S, and L-theanine. Now, probably the one that you've heard of is L-theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. That's a calming agent. It's what I recommend for people who are suffering from anxiety or some form of hyper mindset. 200 to 400 milligrams a day of theanine mellows you out. But green tea contains theanine. It also has strong anti-inflammatory. It's good against cancer, diabetes, arthritis, and antioxidant potential. Very positive bioactive properties that protect your brain and vascular system from neurodegeneration. So let's get our teas in there. Also, if you are pregnant, according to the University of Massachusetts and a published article in the Current Endocrinology, the exposure to common household chemicals during pregnancy can reduce the protection against breast cancer. The particular chemicals, or class of chemicals, used as preservatives, they're used in food and drugs and cosmetics. It's called propylparaben, and propylparaben, and that's that paraben at the end that's really dangerous. And it can alter pregnancy and related changes in the breast in ways that may lessen the protection against breast cancer that pregnancy hormones normally convey. Just something to consider. And finally, this is from the Medical University in Poland. Low magnesium is associated with depression and metabolic disorders, especially in men. So make sure you're getting 800 milligrams of that each day. All right? We are 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go to about a three-minute segment of a longer segment from yesterday because it may have slipped by you how significant it is. It shows you who controls or who's trying to control virtually everything on COVID. Now, why is this information this woman's going to say important, this doctor? She's saying it in front of a hearing of a group of lawyers representing countries around the world, people around the world, who are going to sue governments for corruption and malfeasance and crimes against humanity. So why couldn't every country using a vaccine have its own rules and first look, is there anything else we can do to prevent this? And they're not. They're all talking as one. You'll know why. They've signed a contract. The World Health Organization rules everything. So you can't just go out there and say something on your own. You're under contract. And that contract gives them the right to sell vaccines, promote anything they want. And now Bill Gates wants to help be a part of that, control it. Who is he to say that he's as important as a sovereign nation should be given the same rights with complete indemnification and complete exemption from all laws? And that's what he got. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
On behalf of the health security of the international health regulation, they have made a third edition because the 2005 edition is the second edition. The first one was in 1969. Mm-hmm. But the booklet of 2005, you know, I don't know if you've seen it. Or the booklet, this one, you see, is 2005, but it's written second edition, and the third edition comes, I saw just now, in 2014, would enter into force in 2016. Mm-hmm. And this has made the health security a dictatorship where a director general can decide on his own to sell vaccines, to sell the PCR instead of all the documents that say you have to have a confirmation of a clinical and of there are other tests than PCR. So I'm finding out some inconsistencies that have not been used at all in law. So the first one is this, it's an obligation. So if it's an obligation, what Tedros, I'll call him Tedros, says, this Secretary General terrorist in WHO, when he says something, all the countries have to obey under law.
All the member states of the WHO, everyone yes. who signed the agreement with the WHO, because automatically, because as you're saying, this is part of the constitution of the WHO, this is binding law for everyone who is a member of the WHO.
Right.
Okay.
With two reservations. There are two countries, because I was teaching that, so I know. There were two countries in 2009, in the second edition, that made reservations and it's very interesting. It's the USA, and it is Iran. They don't want to obey to WHO completely. Mm-hmm. The 2016 third edition. Mm-hmm. What happened in WHO? But maybe Sylvia, you were there when it happened. Bill Gates was already around. He was already, you know, mingling, saying that he pays so much money. But he became visible when, I think it was in 2017, or you correct me, that he, I know this through my colleagues there, he requested to be part of the executive board of WHO like a member state.
Ah.
And it's incredible. I said, how can he dare to do this? And they went to the vote. The executive board meets every January. So, and it changes every year. And the lobby, they try to lobby the countries. Of course, he tried to bribe. But it's really an event, because it is not mentioned. Maybe we can get the minutes of the executive board. They even accepted that he would be considered as a member state because of the money he gives. So this is unprecedented in a constitution of member states.
Is he now being considered as a member state?
Not officially.
But unofficially?
Not that I know. Maybe
but
there are documents.
Unofficially, yes. And that's probably because of because that's why he has this immunity, right?
He has total immunity in Switzerland.
Okay. Unofficially, he probably holds that kind of status, right?
Yeah. I can tell you why it is very suspicious is because I think he has done something with every member state, the same contracts. What I found out with Swissmedic is the FDA of Switzerland, mm-hmm. is because I gave the paper to a journalist and now I don't even find it. I can't find it again. The Swissmedic has signed a contract with Bill Gates and WHO.
Aha.
And this is abnormal.
So basically, he literally tried to lobby himself into the WHO as a member state to basically found the country of Bilgatistan. That's basically what he did. I mean, at that point, he would have been basically a one-man country.
Yes, he could be a dictator because he can influence the... But the fact that he was not accepted by vote, that's why the minutes would be very interesting. By vote to be a member state, mm-hmm. He then started to sign papers for countries. That's my hypothesis, because he did it with Swissmedic. So WHO, Bill Gates, and the country in charge of accrediting treatments and vaccination are signing contracts.
He didn't get in official capacity. He didn't get voted in. So then he tried to circumvent that and just basically went around the middleman.
Well, yeah, how can you, if you're a country, sign a contract between three signatures, Bill Gates, a country, and WHO? Because WHO signs with countries, but not, and even that I find pretty weird. You know, why does WHO have to sign with a country an agreement? I don't know. You see, this is a corporate agency doing that, but not WHO. I mean, correct me, Sylvia, but WHO accepts to have a private company, selling a merchant, signing together the three to make the surveillance and to choose the medication. I think that, you know, Swissmedic had posted it on the website. I think that every country, that's my hypothesis, they have done this everywhere. That's why everybody says the same thing in the train, the same message. Every week there's the same thing happening.
Tell us more about this immunity. How does this work?
Okay,
I just, now you should be able to be focused on why everything is being deferred to Bill Gates. The media's fawning all over him. He is as powerful as our entire CDC, FDA, U.S. Public Health Services combined. No human being should ever have that kind of power. He is not a scientist. He is not a clinician. He is not a researcher. You know, he is an entrepreneur. He is the ultimate predatory capitalist. The worst of our economic system, he is the living manifestation of. And he wants to have this sovereignty the same way AstraZeneca now is being called out because, oh, you mean your 95% efficacy rate was not correct? Now it's down to 79%, and still they're not using the proper metrics. They're using a mathematical model. The absolute correct amount is 0.7%, not even 1% efficacy. So when I heard this doctor, a respected doctor, who seemed completely sincere on Tucker Carlson saying, you know, I am pro-vaccine, and Tucker saying, you know, in his own churbish manner, oh, yes, it's saved so many lives. Prove it, Tucker. Prove it. It can't be proven. It didn't cure smallpox or polio or measles, the three that are usually given as examples. But to prove our point and to prove that herd immunity is not what they're suggesting, and you're not going to get to herd immunity through vaccination. If that were the case, then let's go to countries, including China, that had 97 to 98% vaccine compliance, and you had outbreaks of the very diseases that they were being vaccinated for. Well, they had enough to have herd immunity in the United States. College kids had to have certain vaccines to attend college, and that included the measles, and yet they came out all over across the country with different outbreaks in these groups. So you can't have it both ways. You can't say herd immunity protects you if you've been vaccinated, and then have people who've been vaccinated, fully vaccinated, come down with the very illness. You can't say, well, this is idiopathic of unknown origin. No, there is a known origin to these things. And you can't have one day all of the flu in Canada and the United States and Great Britain just disappear as if it didn't happen, not a single case in European or in Great Britain. That doesn't happen. And anyone with a knowledge of public health knows that doesn't happen. You simply recategorize it, and that's what they did with a flaccid paralysis. They recategorized polio. It became no longer polio. It became flaccid paralysis, and the number of people who were getting polio became the number getting this flaccid paralysis. That also happened in India after the wild vaccine problem they had after kids were vaccinated. So we've been lied to, but I've written with Richard Gill over 56 articles on this. These are not, again, opinion pieces. These are detailed scholarly documents. You could offer these in a court of law, and that's our standard. In fact, every single article is vetted based upon, could this be presented in a court of law? So I want the people in this audience to be able to use this to stand up to authority figures who pompously say and self-righteously say, you're not a medical doctor, and you're a very bad one, sir, because you're using belief instead of actual science to make public health policy. That's what's happening now. So think about that. So we did the exposés of AstraZeneca and Bayer and Monsanto and all these other companies. Now, if we were wrong, they'd sue. And they're not, because we'd hit them with a slap action, countersue them for malicious prosecution, and we'd win damages. They know that. Also, if they sued in discovery, we would just destroy them. And they know that. So understand the bullies, you know, the people who control our public health, especially those with strong criminal backgrounds, those who have been engaged in unethical and illegal deceit mechanisms to make their money. You're now going to believe them? Now suddenly, with nothing else changing except better public relations and control of the media, these are trustworthy people where their whole careers they've been pathological in their dispositions. What does that tell you about us? Talking about us, we the people vote for all these different elected officials. In part, we vote because we trust them. We vote because we feel we do not have the insight, knowledge, or power or authority to make the changes that they would make to make it a better world for everyone, especially us. But time and again, they betray us. Almost always, they betray us. Here's the situation. In 1975, you had a problem. You had the ending of the Vietnam War, and if you remember, it was just a disaster. We can all remember the pictures and the video of them getting up on the roof of the embassy in Saigon and getting off in helicopters, and later those helicopters being pushed off the carriers because they had no room. But what we did is we had worked with people who were identifying the Pathet Lao or the Viet Cong or the North Vietnamese regular soldiers, and these people, for whatever the reasons, that they were our eyes and ears. We promised them that we would protect them. Well, then suddenly they had no place to go. And you know that when, just like the in France, when it retook France using the resistance from the Germans, the very first thing they did, they went after those who had compromised and sided with the Germans. They would shave the women's hair off and write whore across their had to wear this paper that said what they were in the minds of the partisans and the French citizens. The partisans were extremely courageous. A lot of them died. And a lot of them were just shot. In any case, so it doesn't take a real strong history lesson to realize if you've been on the wrong side and now the people are going to control the country, you're going to be dealt with, whether you're in a re-indoctrination camp, which most were sent to, and spent years being re-indoctrinated, or you're killed. The U.S. had an obligation to get them out, just like they did in Afghanistan or in Iraq. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, work with us, we'll give you money, and we'll protect you. And then when things turn sour or your plans change, they're left. They're just going to be dealt with. Anyhow, it was President Ford at the time, in my opinion, not the brightest of presidents nor the most motivated, but he argued for a relief package before Congress to help our allies evacuate and their families. And that was good that he did that. At least get them into a safe place. Let them reestablish. You don't want to see children and families who had nothing to do with this, who are then victimized because they were on our side. And it almost worked, almost, except there was one senator who opposed any effort to give this kind of support and safe sanctuary to these people. As a result, it was a mess. And that same senator did everything in his power to sabotage this because he was a political opponent of Ford. And Ford did manage to get 1,500 South Vietnamese allies out, but there were probably 50,000 that did not get out. And that's only because Ford used some executive power to act as quickly as he could. There would have been a much larger slaughter otherwise. So anyhow, the package was rejected, and because this senator, every effort that was made, that senator stopped it. And at the end of the day, that senator who stopped all these people from getting out and getting safe passage, at least to the United States, if not other allied countries, was Senator Joe Biden. Something to remember. But take a look back and be honest in the actual record of Joe Biden. Just look at what he did, look at what he supported, and ask yourself, has he changed? Is he a different person? Are there different values? And if he has changed, what's changed? I think it's important because right now I'll show you a few things that have not changed, or war on drugs. I believe that we should have no war on drugs. We should make all drugs legal. We should let every person involved with drugs, except for the terrorists, and meaning the heads of the cartels that murder people, I believe that everyone else should be let out of prison. I believe users should have their records expunged because it's just vile and stupid that you would put a person for a nonviolent crime in jail. There are other ways to help a person help society if they've erred without punishing the person, but we do just the opposite, and that's all political and economic. Oh, and for those of you moving to Alabama, not my suggestion, though I used to enjoy visiting Alabama because there were some nice people down there, including Dr. Roy Evers down in Cottonwood, Alabama. Alabama has banned yoga as part of a Christian rights war on pluralism. Yeah, Alabama House votes to end yoga ban, but don't say, well, the news that Alabama House of Representatives voted to overturn a quarter century ban on practicing yoga in public schools made its brief rounds on Twitter, with many offering their own pithy quips on the issue. This is one of those stories that says, how in the world did you ever have a ban in the first place on yoga? And that's your Christian right, the more zealot the individual in any movement, the more extreme whatever they're working on becomes a weaponized project. So I remember, who was it? It was a 700 Club who said, yoga is Satan. Yeah, sure. You say so. How could you be wrong, Pat Robinson? So now we're looking at AstraZeneca. Why don't you go reread the article we wrote on AstraZeneca to see that maybe this 79% is not what it is. And also to the doctor last night, to Tucker Carlson, you all keep getting it wrong, dead wrong. So I'm going to call you out on this in a polite way. Before you say how the vaccines, even the New York Times, will allow you to take off the mask and return to society, it will not. There's not a single scientific study that was done in any of these vaccine trials to prevent you from contracting or prevent you from contributing to the spread of COVID. It does not prevent hospitalizations or death. It only prevents, and the only thing it was tested for, and only had a very, very low efficacy of the actual number of going from a mild case to a more severe case. That's all it does. That's all it does. So now you're concerned if you're vaccinated or if you have COVID, as the doctor said. And this part of his argument, I agree with. I think he's completely sound in this. He said, you're inferring a certain immunity, though we don't know for how long, with your own body's natural antibody system. It's sought that virus, it's killed the virus, and now you're protected for a period of time. So he's saying, what happens if you've had the virus, you have your own immune system now, you shouldn't be vaccinated. And especially if you have the virus and you're an older person, you absolutely shouldn't be vaccinated. He is right, because it can create a hyper-reactivity at your immune system. Now, do you wonder why the American media and the World Health Organization and all these organizations are speaking with one voice? They have to, because of the control mechanisms. They're not mentioning all the people who died in Gibraltar in a hospital who were COVID negative till they got the vaccine, when COVID positive and died. I think it was 53 to 58 the last time I saw. In Norway, in Spain, all over the place, people in nursing homes, older people with comorbidities, no COVID, gets the vaccine, gets COVID, and dies. Now, shouldn't that raise an enormous red flag to everyone? Now, I don't have time today, but tomorrow we're going to play a clip from an Israeli woman activist about what they're doing in Israel. It is harrowing, because Israel, Netanyahu, wanted to make Israel the test of the world, because they don't have a large population. I believe it's somewhere around 78 million citizens, but they want to get them 100% vaccinated. I think 5 million have been vaccinated. But then they started to see a lot of deaths and a lot of side effects. The mainstream media wasn't covering it. And now it's been draconian. You get a special card. It allows you to go to work. It allows you to shop, go to theaters and other places. If you don't get that, you don't go out. You can't shop. You don't go to work. And now they want you to wear bracelets, an ankle bracelet, like a prisoner. You can wear it on the ankle or on the wrist, but you can't go out. You're monitored. You're tracked. Not because you've committed a crime, but because you've exercised your freedom of choice based upon the evidence that you see and your concerns about not honoring any of the rules of decency and of science, looking first to see there is no harm. There's a lot of harm that's going on, but you're not told about these harms. Did you know, as of this morning, from the federal government's official vaccine adverse events reporting system, 38,444 serious adverse events, 1,739 deaths, 6,286 very serious events. Wow. You start adding these numbers up. These are serious numbers. Yeah, especially that 1,739. Now put this in context. The most we've ever seen reported accurately is 10%, but it's more likely 1%. So if 1% are accurately reported, then multiply this times 99. And then you suddenly start seeing deaths that, whoa. So why isn't that being reported? We report it. The Children's Health Defense Fund reports it, but not the mainstream media. And none of the other countries are reporting it this way. So what's it mean now in Israel to be in a country where you, as a citizen in good standing, you are now treated as the other? We ever had a place like this in history where people have been treated as the other? Wearing bracelets? Being in quarantine? Having no rights? And that's just one model of it. The media will not touch it. Thank goodness there's a strong human rights movement in Israel, and we're hearing from them. We'll hear from them tomorrow. And just finally today, so remember this, CDC is ignoring the inquiry into these increasing numbers. There's no inquiry in that at all right now, and there should be. I just want to also mention that tonight at 7 o'clock, I want to have someone on that's really going to challenge how we think. He is Dr. Gauthier Chapelle. He is Belgium. He's going to be talking from Germany, where he's working now. He is one of the world's leading scientists, climate activists, and he's an interdependent researcher in biomimicry, and that's the new discipline of a collapsing society. And he shows how integral systems peak, break down, and collapse. And guess where we're at in the United States? We're not in the breakdown stage. We're in the collapse stage. All you have to do is look around. I just got a phone call from someone down in Austin. Now, I love Austin. I lectured there, loved running in their park, and just a wonderful place for years, decades, not now. It's like a zombie apocalypse. Streets are frequently empty, homeless people everywhere, tent cities going up, drug use, crime. And what was the heartbeat of the city is gone. Now, when you're trying to promote a place for tourism or for a living, you won't show that you're out of water. You won't show that your big, beautiful, magnificent park where everything was done, it would burn to the ground in the last big fire. And that people are now moving to other locations. Some of the original artists who've lived there for decades are moving elsewhere, much like the people, the original community in Santa Fe, Taos, New Mexico, Boulder. I remember lecturing in all those places at its heyday, and now I wouldn't lecture in any of those places. The energy's gone, and everything in life is the vitalism of energy. So that's what's happening. That's collapse. Los Angeles, you can drive for 3 to 4 miles and never see anything but poverty, which is not being addressed, which should be. Instead, it's being denied, avoided, as if somehow if we're rich enough to live in a gated community, it's not going to touch us. That's just an emotional callousness towards the other. So tonight, 7 o'clock, one of the great scientists, ethicists in the world, and we're going to talk about in depth. So this is something for the thinkers, how everything can collapse, and considering that another end of the world is possible within our lifetimes. And that won't be exaggeration. There won't be hyperbole. There won't be fatalism. I'll look for the positive in everything. I'll look for the solutions in everything. But I'll be laying down some heavy duty questions to him, because he is one of the people who is specialized in his professorship and research in all of these interconnected topics. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. Some good news, and that is that more and more people, including a lot of very serious scientists, are suggesting we could really lengthen our lifespan. I'm happy to hear that. In fact, this is a Russian scientist. His name is Alexei Turchin, T-U-R-C-H-I-N, has been researching the topic for years. According to him, going digital is our best chance to live forever. Here's what is said, and this is an interesting article from Russia Beyond. And he says, quote, he thinks it's possible to become immortal. Stuck in self-isolation, like many of us today, Alexei isn't sitting idly. He is not only working on his new book entitled Immortality, but is regularly collecting vast amounts of data about himself, from DNA and his toenail clippings and details about his dreams to sound recordings and things he does every day. Why? A dedicated life, existentialist, an advocate for digital immortality, he believes that one day humanity will see the emergence of artificial intelligence so strong it could download this personal data into its system, thus allowing a person to live forever. As he says, accumulating such data is only one of at least three options available to us right now. The second option is simply to survive until the creation of strong artificial intelligence. Quote, the main cause of death in humans so far has been aging, and if we could learn how to counter it, we could live up to 3,000 years. Countering aging is just the first step to achieving immortality in this scenario. If we die, we don't live long enough to see the creation of technologies that will allow humans to transform our bodies into cyberborgs, for example, and ultimately download ourselves into a supercomputer. Then the third option, cryonics, i.e. preserving the body and or the brain in low temperature liquid nitrogen, in the hopes that one day humanity will be able to resurrect it and somehow scan the brain to create a digital copy and a supercomputer. Therefore, you are alive digitally, and that's what he believes is going to happen. And he may be absolutely correct in all of those. I think that that is all being done and is reasonable. However, I like the old-fashioned way. Virtually all the scientists I speak to at international conferences on anti-aging, where I'm invited as a keynote speaker based upon my original work in anti-aging, say the same thing. They're going for stem cells, to have the stem cells that can help rejuvenate a particular organ in the body and get that organ working better. This is based upon the old tissue implant theory of a man named Niehans, back in Switzerland, back in the 1920s and 30s and 40s. Now, I was in Germany on several occasions, and I went to the Niehans clinic, and or Klaus Martin clinic that used the Niehans theory. And they take the fetal cells and inject them into people. And I want to tell you, it's a big needle. It doesn't look like a 24-gauge needle. This is huge. And they implant that into your buttocks, and then they put these in there. So if you have a bad kidney, they give you kidney fetal cells, etc. And according to the 50 people who were residents there for about a month, it works. And I also saw this done at another clinic by Dr. Popoff and Dr. Goldwag. They did the same thing. And again, I heard from people, they come every 3 to 5 years and get this implant. The plant runs anywhere from the implants $5,000 to $10,000. But here's the part of this I found interesting. At not one single person, not one, said that they were willing to change anything in their lifestyle in order to slow down the aging process. And Dr. Popoff asked, would I be willing to do a lecture, since I was one of the people doing clinical studies at the time. And I said, sure. And it was impromptu, but all the patients got together in this room. And so I spent about 3 hours, and I went through the biology of aging, because they were all smoking and drinking and eating garbage and not exercising. They wanted the shortcut. I found the same thing in Klaus Martin's clinic. I was sitting there talking with a person outside overlooking the Alps, beautiful environment, while a person was smoking and having a glass of alcohol. And the message on anti-aging is not that difficult. It's that every single action in life, and I mean every action and every thought that you do, will correspond to either a constructive or destructive impact upon your DNA. Now, some of these assaults are minor. You overexercise or you overwork. You get a good night's sleep and you rebalance yourself. You take it easy. You take a break. Let your body recover. You can pretty much recover most of what your body was challenged with, especially when you're younger. However, most people don't do something and it's one off. I did it. That's it. I'm not doing it again. Instead, it becomes integrated into their daily lives. They're doing the same bad habits every single day. And therefore, at some point, since every organ in the body has its own biological clock called the telomeres, your heart could be 60. Chronologically, you could be 60. But your lungs, because of smoking, might be 80. Therefore, your lungs are going to give out sooner than your heart. We see this with Alzheimer's, a form of dementia, where a person physically looks all right, but they can't put words together, they can't remember things, they've lost cognition because their brain has had so much neurotoxicity and inflammation. That goes back to all those French fries and hamburgers and hot dogs and soft drinks and coffee and alcohol, the things that we consume and a lack of exercise and a lot of stress, inappropriately dealt with, and then you have massive amounts of inflammation that you can't feel going on in your body. And one day, the organ that's most susceptible, in this case, let's say it's the brain, you end up with some neurological defect. Now, your brain is not the same age biologically. It's much older, and or it could be an athlete where you've overused your muscles. Now, your muscles are older than the rest of your body. So in a series of clinical studies, a total of 47 to date, these are major clinical studies, thousands of people participated, and they've been published in peer-reviewed journals. I've been invited to scientific conferences to share the results. And just this year, in the last year and a half, I've done three. And they're different in that we put people into an environment, a beautiful environment, hence why. Because all the science shows we need green time. We need to be around parks and nature. So they're outdoors and they're experiencing nature and it's beautiful. Then exercising together each day. Doing exercise that don't overstress the body but get the body back into shape. And we're all doing it together. Then we're all having our juices, 12 to 13 glasses of juice each day throughout the day. We're having our one meal a day, and a large meal in the afternoon, a smaller meal in the evening. And we're doing our meditations, reading, something that stimulates our thought processes, something philosophical, having lectures on the philosophy of life and why, what is our purpose in life? Because once you hit all these primal factors, you help a person in effect reset their agenda for living. So not only do they find it easy to exercise and de-stress and not take everything personally, and care for their body and ask a question, am I taking in something that will be cumulatively positive for my DNA and allow it to be younger, the telomeres, to stay longer for a longer period of time? And if not, why not? And because of the philosophical issues, the primary nutritional issues are easier to adhere to, so people stay on the program. And the results have been nothing less than spectacular. I mean, absolutely reversing the biochemistry and reversing the physical appearances. People who didn't have hair are now growing hair in their 70s at natural color. Eyebrows, same. People who lost all muscle mass now have muscles. People who couldn't exercise are now doing marathons. People who had just pot bellies now have abs. And they're happy. Happy people live longer lives. So just an idea. that where some people want to have an artificial intelligence scan your brain, and therefore your brain would live on, you wouldn't, but your brain would. I'm thinking, isn't it be better if we live now, a longer life, add 15, 20 years? Because sooner or later, there will be artificial intelligence that allows us to repair damage to the DNA, and therefore in our physical bodies, we can now make 70 the new 45. Good news. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.